Good evening. Welcome to Third Thursday Community Conversation. I'm Jay Anderson. Each month, we sit down with an interesting guest for an in-depth exchange of thoughts and ideas, opinions, and points of view, professional and personal. The people of the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, are an integral part of the fabric of life in Cook County. I recently sat down with Grand Portage Band Chairman Norman Deschamps for a wide-ranging discussion on the economy, environment, education, sovereignty, gaming, and politics in general. You've been chairman of this band for how long?
I've been in office in excess of 20 years, so been in office for quite some time.
Any background? You're from here originally?
Or? Oh, yeah. Born and raised at Grand Portage. Lived here all my life. Both my parents are from Grand Portage, enroll members of the band, and I've lived here. They were both born and raised here at Grand Portage, so pretty much homegrown, I guess.
Let's talk about an overview of the band. How it, first of all, explain what a band is and its relationship to the community, its historical relationship, maybe what created these bands, and also talk a little bit about the Minnesota Chippewa tribe and your relationship with that. Just generally, how this place works in the community.
Well, the Grand Portage Band, we call ourselves the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and we're one member band of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, and they are composed of six reservations in Minnesota, and Minnesota Chippewa tribe is unique, very unique in the country in the fact that we have six member reservations with their own separate constitution and bylaws in addition to the overall constitution of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe. And we are one tribe with six member reservations. And the Minnesota Chippewa tribe is governed by two individuals. The two officers from each reservation make up it's called the TEC, Tribal Executive Committee, that makes and passes laws that govern all six reservations. We have a common enrollment. We have common as a matter of fact, the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe Constitution requires that our election process and enrollment process be uniform. And getting back to the unique part, the bands themselves are also recognized by the federal government as a federally recognized tribe. So sometimes this works in our favor and sometimes it doesn't, in that we are six bands scattered all over Minnesota, some very large like White Earth, some very small like us, some with big populations and small land bases, and Grand Portage has a smaller population with a larger land base. And we're sitting up here on Lake Superior, and White Earth has prairie. And so there's a lot of unique differences within the bands, and a lot of the decisions are, you know, our neighbor is Cook County. White Earth sits in four counties, so they have four county boards to deal with. We have one, so the differences are many, but I think as Indian people it gives us strength because we do have a lot of issues in common, and we work together to protect those.
Tell me about the sovereignty issue. Can you, so that we better understand what that means among these various bands. What does sovereignty mean, and how does that work in relationship to the rest of the surrounding community? You mentioned Cook County.
Yeah. Sovereignty, I guess if you're looking for a basic definition of sovereignty, it would be the ability to make decisions free of outside influence. And taking that definition, Grand Portage passes our own laws, regulates our own members, and is able to manage resources and protect what we need to protect for the band members of Grand Portage. A good example would be zoning. We have our own zoning law. We have sovereignty allows us to regulate our own members and decide how strict we want to be or how liberal we want to be in those laws. We decide that. And the interesting thing about tribal sovereignty is it's what's referred to as an inherent sovereignty, which means that nobody gave it to us. We always had it. Nobody said, okay, we're going to allow you to do this or you're allowed to do this based on something else. That's inherent sovereignty means we've always had it, never were given that from some other entity. We've had it from the very beginning. So I think that's another key issue, that sovereignty is not based on somebody else's laws.
How does that work in relationship to the rest of the county? For example, you're talking about zoning and these kinds of things. Obviously, you have boundaries to the reservation, and within those boundaries, these laws apply. Are there shared actions and responsibility outside?
Yeah, shared and some. One of the things that is clear on regarding Indian reservation is we are bound by federal law, and acceptance in Public Law 280 was a law that was it basically gives the state of Minnesota or a state the right to regulate civil and criminal jurisdiction on reservations. And Minnesota is a Public Law 280 state. Although there are, you can retrocede, which means that you have to go to the state of Minnesota and ask their permission to pull out of 280. There are two reservations in Minnesota that are not affected by 280. That's Red Lake and Boyce Fort. They essentially are what some people refer to as a closed reservation, where the state and county have absolutely no jurisdiction of any kind. We haven't done that at Grand Portage, so that means that we are subject to Minnesota criminal law and enforced by the state, which in this case means the county sheriff. But Public Law 280 does not encompass regulatory authority, which means that anything that is regulated by the state of Minnesota, we can regulate ourselves. This brings up the issue of gaming, where how can tribes have a casino when nobody else can? The state of Minnesota regulates gaming because they have gaming operations. They have the lottery, they have pull tabs, these kind of things. So the state does regulate gaming on their own. So the tribes are able to regulate gaming on our own based on a civil regulatory authority.
Helping to put Indian country in perspective, tonight's Third Thursday Community Conversation with Grand Portage Chairman Norman Deschamps. Gaming is an important part of the revenue here?
Very much. Gaming has provided a vehicle for the reservation to invest in education for our young, pay for, we have a very good health program here, healthcare. We pay a lot of those healthcare costs ourselves. So it's allowed us to invest in infrastructure that we didn't have before. Prior to gaming, we didn't even have a gym here for our kids to play in. So it's allowed us to make those investments for the good of the community. And when you mention gaming, usually the first thing people think about or talk about is, well, there's a lot of reservations that pay per capita. We don't do that at Grand Portage. We've never have
paid. Explain what per capita is.
Per capita is they take the revenues or the profits from gaming and they distribute an amount to their members from that profit. We don't disagree with that because it's no different than any other business that, you know, how you spread that profit's your business. But we choose to not do that. We never have, and use that money to invest in the infrastructure on the reservation.
So use it for a planned economic development?
Well, economic development, we use it for many things. Housing, by infrastructure, I mean water and sewer. And we're able to invest in those facilities where we weren't before. Public buildings, this office we're sitting in, our community center. We have a school up there and facilities for the community members. And once you build those, you have to operate them. And so gaming provides that resource to keep funds to keep it running, keep it operating. And we have no plans in the immediate future to triple or expand our operation. We're comfortable with what we have, and as a matter of fact, we're always looking for new employees. It's the Cook County right now is a we're always looking for employees. So
this is a method by which you are able to spread the wealth, so to speak, for the good of the entire community rather than the benefit of an individual.
Right, and it's been the philosophy of the community from day one, and a lot of, like I say, a lot of the things that we invest in, we would have no other source of funds. We trust land can't be taxed, so we have no taxing authority to tax the land here, so we don't have that resource that most counties and municipalities and other governments have. We don't tax our land, so we don't have that resource coming in yearly.
Now, it seems like there's a lot, not all, but a lot of bands do have gaming activities and facilities. Is that because there's, as you point out, no real other sources of income for bands, or have other activities been explored?
I think other activities have been explored, and there's a lot of reservations who are doing different things and wonderful things economically, but gaming provided an opportunity to not only create a source of revenue but also jobs. Along with being a business that's profitable, we needed full-time year-round jobs. And majority of the reservations until gaming came along really didn't have that. And the benefits that go with that, health benefits, the ability to plan ahead, to purchase things and know you're going to be working 4 or 5 years from now. Prior to gaming, we didn't have that resource. But I'm sure other reservations are in the same situation, that it's a huge economic engine, and hopefully, you know, because of our location, it makes us, as far as diversification, a little more difficult just because of where we are. But I know other tribes have gotten into other things.
Well, but the state of Minnesota periodically, through the legislature and others, managed to bring up gaming as something that they want to do, and the Racino bill is, or several of them have been gone through legislature, and I think there's another one being considered. How does that sit with you?
Well, we're opposed to that, and there's several reasons. Number one is there, because there are 11 reservations with casinos in Minnesota. Any new money generated from casinos is really not going to be new money. It's going to be moving money around and jobs. There is not millions of new gamblers out there. You're going to take those gamblers from someone else. Now, some people might say, well, that's okay, but I don't know that as far as a net benefit for new jobs, you're moving one jobs from one area to the other. So I don't know that that's really been discussed. And the other thing is, we feel like we've invested a lot in this industry in Minnesota. Minnesota actually in the country was a leader in gaming, and still is. And there's a lot of investment there. There's a lot of infrastructure that us and other reservations have invested in, and when you do that over time, you want to be able to make sure you can pay for those. And so it's and does the average Minnesota resident want expansion of gaming, and where does it end? The big concern is you open a door for expansion. Does everything come on the table then? I know there's talk of putting machines in bars. There's, you know, many different proposals. There's talk of putting a casino somewhere to help build a stadium for the Vikings and those kind of things. So once that expansion begins, we're not sure where it's going to end.
Well, and they've been successful. I remember, or Brent, what brings to my mind is the Shakopee Mdewakanton. They reinvest a lot of their earnings with you, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, yes, they do. And the tribal chairman there is a good friend of mine and a very wise man, Stanley Crooks. They have assisted us. Our casino at Grand Portage is profitable, but not to the extent that we want to do everything we can do here. He has given us grants to help build a daycare Head Start Center to educate our little kids. Our C-Store was done with his help. He also helped us renovate our lodge, and just recently is helping us renovate Hollow Rock Resort. We're doing that with a grant from Shakopee, and they are very, very active in language programs, and I know in the Twin Cities they support many organizations that would otherwise have no source of revenue, nowhere else to get it. They support language programs, support social services programs all over the country, and are very, very generous in their profits, and don't ask anything in return.
So it's Indian people helping Indian people.
Exactly.
And I can understand why that might be a threat, particularly the Racino. And your position with the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, are there some general concerns that the tribe discusses? I mean, are there things that are common to the bands here in Minnesota?
Yes, there are, and I think several. You know, without getting into the real detail of them, one of them is the we're finding the disparity between the education achievements with Indian people in Minnesota and also the large number at the state did a report last year and the number of Indian children, by children I mean younger kids going into foster homes and adoption, is just a crime. So we are really concerned about this and need to find a way to turn this around, and we're hopefully going to work with the state of Minnesota, because a lot of these issues take place in the Twin Cities and off the reservation. But it is a big concern of all the reservations. We all have people living down there, and we need to find a way to reduce the gap that exist there in some of these disparities.
Do we have a lot of people living off the reservation here?
Yes, we I would say in generally about almost two-thirds of the people live elsewhere.
Those would be people enrolled in this band.
Yes.
Living off the reservation.
Right.
Does that present some social and political problems for you?
Well, it only in that the hurdles we end up with is trying to serve those people in other jurisdictions. We try to support as much as we can some of these general concepts like this to make sure that their needs are taken care of. And it's really hard when they're living, say, in Minneapolis and we're pretty small potatoes when you're talking to a city that size. And I mean, the agency, Human Service Agency, probably has more people than we do. So it's a tough, but as a tribe, We worked through the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council and various other tribal and statewide organizations to try and rectify some of these problems. And they're going to be ongoing, and hopefully we can do something about that.
Helping to put Indian country in perspective, tonight's Third Thursday Community Conversation with Grand Portage Chairman Norman Deschamps.
Well, you mentioned education is one of the issues that the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe discusses. And I know, could you talk a little bit about your relationship here between the Grand Portage Band and the school systems in Cook County?
Sure. We actually have a relationship with two schools. By two schools, I mean organizations. We recently opened a charter school here on Grand Portage, and things are going well. And in doing so, we also have a relationship with the independent school district. As a matter of fact, I have a daughter who in ninth grade down there. So our philosophy always has been we need to support both organizations, because why would you not? The students who are coming out of our charter school go to eventually Cook County High School anyway. So it's in everybody's best interest to make that a quality place and to try to work with both agencies. We try to, what we do is we offer support. We have support staff that helps students and try to get, you know, the achievement level up there. And so the charter school is an independent school. We really don't have any direct say, or should we? It's a community-based school, and like I say, we don't have any. They've got their own separate board and all that kind of thing, and we don't are not involved in their day-to-day operations, although they are strongly supported by us and the community.
The transition from Oshkeaga to Cook County Schools at some point, is that going to be easy? I mean, is it easy for young people to make that transition?
I think that's one of the challenges we have, I think, is to prepare them for that transition. I went through that myself when I grew up at Grand Portage. This was in the late 60s. There were six grades at Grand Portage, and it was run by the school district, and we went to seventh grade in Grand Marais. On the surface, it doesn't seem like it's that big a deal, but you're really going from one community to a new community, and there's a lot of issues with that. I think all we can do is try to prepare our kids. You're joining a group of kids who have been together for 6 years, and you haven't been there. But we're working with the school district and the superintendent, who, by the way, is doing an excellent job. The best recourse is to support both organizations and say, you know, they really do care about kids. And that's, I guess, if you have that basic philosophy, hopefully things will work out.
Now, here, educationally and just generally, this is a specific culture. Is that a difficult transition for young people to make into, for example, as you said, there's people that have been together for 6 years and you haven't been with them. Help us understand the emphasis or the importance of transmitting and reinforcing this culture on this reservation to young people and anybody for that matter, and how does that work when you transition to a different community?
I think as far as the culture, there are huge differences, and I think the transition from a community school to a public school, it could be anything from, you know, you're now with a group of friends who go to church together, who think differently. Not a bad thing, but they think differently. What we have to do, I think, as adults, I'm going to say adults, I'm not going to say any, is make sure that kids, their self-esteem is protected, and they have that individual self-esteem to be able to get through that and say, someone is in a different situation other than what they're comfortable with. I think their self-esteem and being proud of who they are and proud of where they come from can carry them through. And I think on the other end, there has to be an understanding that there are differences. You may not know what they are and ever be able to grasp them, but there are differences.
Helping to put Indian Country in perspective, tonight's Third Thursday Community Conversation with Grand Portage Chairman Norman Deschamps.
Possibly it's a stereotype, or maybe it's true. You can tell me. Non-Indian people tend to view Indian people as being a little bit closer to their natural environment. It's the stewardship, that sort of thing. We have, obviously, a lot of moose, a lot of deer, a lot of bear, and we also have other natural resources that possibly would, you know, be appealing to mining interests and this kind of thing. Help me understand how a band member like yourself or anyone feels about that environment. This is obviously a beautiful place, and it obviously has great meaning. What do you do to protect that?
Everything we can. That brings up a whole bunch of issues, and you're right. We our whole culture is based on our environment and where we live and what surrounds us. And I think starting out would be a basic concept of tribal people have a whole different idea of land ownership. At Grand Portage, the land they live on, they do not own it. They have the right to live there for as long as they want or as long as they're alive, but it's a whole different concept. It goes all the way back to when the treaties were signed that, you know, Indian people were signing documents that they didn't really understand. They had no concept of, they didn't believe in land ownership and had no concept of what that meant, and which is a really basic difference between how you look at everything. But the environment is very important to us. We're concerned right now about what's going on with the moose. We are real interested in the invasive species that we see in Lake Superior and eventually, hopefully, not getting into the inland waters, and global warming. These things are things that affect our environment, not only Indian people, but everybody. There's common talk now, you know, we see things up here at Grand Portage that we didn't experience as kids. We have ticks. We're, you know, down by the lake here, we have wood ticks now. Unheard of when we were growing up. Okay, why are they here? Something's got to be happening. We are now have breeding populations of raccoons here. They didn't exist here. Something's going on. And I think, and you know, probably one of the biggest problems we have is everybody is focusing on why this is happening, and nobody really has it. We have some ideas about what's happening and, you know, how we're treating the earth that we live on. But I think the first step is everybody has to acknowledge that it is happening.
Do you feel you have a place at the table in that discussion?
Very much so, because when we signed the Treaty of 1854, we reserved hunting and fishing rights in approximately 5 million acres of northern Minnesota. Those are essentially property rights. The best comparison I can use with that is mining rights, which are severed from the ownership. Mining companies go in now and are digging under mining rights that were reserved years and years and years ago. Those treaty rights, which allow us to hunt and fish, and our forefathers, when they signed those treaties, really expected that what they were doing was to protect our way of life, and although they were giving up some things, they really wanted to make sure that the people had a way to live and to exist. And one way that, you know, the only way they knew how was to living off the land and make sure that natural resource was there. If something happens to that resource, or it goes away, or there something, you know, some profound changes take place where it's not there, those rights really don't mean much. So we think we have a vested interest in what happens in those ceded territories to make sure that those animals and that natural resource, wild rice and just plain clean water, are there to make sure that they provide for us for years to, and our children for years to come. The wild rice issue is important because many, you know, not so much Grand Portage. We don't have as much rice here as other residents, just because of the lay of the land here. We've got cold, deep lakes, and there's not that, you know. But it's important because that's culturally important to all Indians, and in the ceded territory, that's a precious resource. And wild rice goes back to it's a staple food for Indian people, and it's something that was here, comes from the land. The Indian people harvested that for forever, and if they ever lose that or contaminate it, I think we've lost more than just the rice. We've lost a way of life, and the connection that people have with that is, it, you know, you just can't. It's hard to put into words.
You mentioned wild rice, and that reminds me that also ties into the mining question as to whether or not there's some legislation pending on that. Do you here on this reservation have your own mining rights, or can somebody come and?
It is yes and no. Okay. We do have we've been purchasing and trying to get ownership of the mining rights whenever we can, and there are pockets on the reservation where there are outside interests that do own mineral rights, and so we are working every day to try and get those back in band ownership, and we are very interested in what's going on in mining. And I think I'm glad you brought that up, because there's meetings going on now regarding, well, Polymet has been in the news the last week or so, and we've been participating in those meeting with the mining companies, EPA, and state people. And our position all along and always will be that we want them to follow the rules. As far as the permitting and regulations that go along with mining, is our position on this has been, if you're going to do that, then you need to follow the rules that are in place. And it's very, very simple.
Environmental impact studies and all that.
Exactly,
kind of
that are done that say, this is the safe way to do it. We know the technology is there. We know mines can afford to put proper safeguards in place. And in our position, you know, we're not anti-jobs or anything like that. We're just saying, if you're going to do this, make sure the environment's protected, and we don't destroy or contaminate any of the rivers, and wild rice is a big issue, or any of the, do any kind of damage or impact the land in a negative way.
Helping to put Indian country in perspective, tonight's Third Thursday Community Conversation with Grand Portage Chairman Norman Deschamps.
Do you feel that you have a pretty good rapport with the Environmental Protection Agency? Do they listen to you on these issues, or how do you feel about that?
I think we do. We have an environmental department that works with them, and this goes back to the sovereignty issue. Minnesota Pollution Control Agency doesn't have jurisdiction on the reservation. which means that our primary regulator here is EPA out of Chicago. So
that's the federal agency.
The federal agency. So we deal with them for instance, our village sewer, community sewer facility is licensed through EPA. And we do have a good working relationship with them. We try to communicate with them as much as we can. Some of these other issues that ballast water and these other things that are affecting Lake Superior, you end up with not only EPA, but Corps of Engineers, many other agencies involved. And we try to keep up on that and make sure that, you know, like I said before, we're a small player, but we have a lot at stake. We're sitting right next to one of the pristine natural resources in the world, Lake Superior. I mean, there's nothing like it anywhere. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be messing with it.
Talk a little bit more about the interconnectedness between the land, the creatures on the land, and the rice, and the culture. I mean, it seems that Indian people are much more closely knit to those things.
They are, and sometimes it creates conflicts in philosophy. For instance, we have an organization called 1854 Authority, which manages the resources off the reservation, and people sometimes have a hard time understanding that what we're doing is managing the resources so the Indian people can harvest, whether it's rice or the other natural resources, moose, deer, fish, with the emphasis totally on subsistence. And the difference between that and a lot of the other agencies' management is based more on a sporting aspect. Limits are in place. We have no such thing in our organization as a trophy management program. It doesn't exist. We don't manage anything for trophy. It's all subsistence management that makes sure that resource is there and takes care of the people. And I think that's a big difference. Part of our culture, our natural food, and a little different than being going out and we have no problem with people who want to go out and have fun fishing. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the way we manage is, we don't manage in that light. We manage in a whole different aspect because of that connection to the land.
The DNR sets limits on things. I'm most familiar with Mille Lacs Lake because I used to live there. Mm-hmm. And all of those restrictions. Are there any of those kinds of restrictions or rules, regulations, whatever you want to call them, here on the Grand Portage?
DNR has no presence or authority within the boundaries of the reservation. So we have our own conservation code here. The same is true of 1854. And they set limits, and right now, say, for fishing limits, the limit is double the state limit. And we signed an agreement with the state of Minnesota several years ago saying that we would work with the state of Minnesota for the good of everybody and make sure those resources, we understand that, we have many other people who use those resources, maybe for different reasons, but to use them, and we respect that. And so we've limited ourselves to bag limits in all areas. I know in Mille Lacs they allow netting in Mille Lacs for walleye. And they use that resource to go back and feed the elders who can't, and which is a good thing, and we support that. But we've agreed not to do that, so I guess in a nutshell, on the reservation, the DNR has no authority. It's strictly the Grand Portage Band regulates that.
One thing that I'd like to clarify a little bit, the Grand Portage Band does not, I mean, the physical boundaries end at the border, but the social boundaries do not. Talk about the, there's a lot of people from Grand Portage that live in Canada.
Sure, and we have family connections to the nearest reserve to us is in Canada is the Fort William Reserve, and we have a lot of family connections. We have a lot of band members here who live in Canada and commute work here on a daily basis, and so we were here prior to that border being there, so it creates, you know, several problems for us as far as you know, we didn't recognize it, and now for members to do what they're doing, which is living in Canada and working here, you know, it creates some hoops that they have to jump through, and you know, we were pretty upset about the criteria for crossing the border and that you had to have a passport and those kind of things. But we also understand we're like everybody else too. We want to be safe just like anybody else, and we're not passing judgment on who should or shouldn't come across. It's just that, you know, we're being forced to, you know, who, one of the few people who are not immigrants here have to prove who we are, you know. It's
you were here first.
Yeah.
Helping to put Indian country in perspective, tonight's Third Thursday Community Conversation with Grand Portage Chairman Norman Deschamps.
Let's talk a little bit, to wind down here, a little bit about the whole issue of relations with non-Indian people. As I mentioned to you before, we did a piece on deconstructing racism, and John Morin, your vice chair, was part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that, and also a little bit about this group of band members who live off the reservation. Let's start with that first. I mean, is this, do these people lose the connections that you've been talking about to the land?
That's a tough one to answer. I don't think so. I don't think that's something that you just lose because you're no longer here. I know the 1854 authority, I keep going back to them, but our offices are located in Duluth. So a lot of those members are able to exercise their rights under in the ceded territory off the reservation, and a huge majority of them do.
Now, you've used the word ceded territory off the reservation. Can you define that for me? What does that mean?
Sure, that's the 5 million acres I mentioned. It's pretty much in the northeastern part of Minnesota. I guess generally I could say the boundary goes up along the border over towards Lake Vermilion and then down to almost Hinckley and back up. And there's three reservations that signed the 1854 treaty that reserved the right to hunt and fish there. That was Grand Portage, Boys Fort, and Fond du Lac. And
so when you talk about a ceded territory, yes, Indian people ceded that,
yes,
the United States government.
Right. We agreed to move to this reservation and said we're giving up this area in exchange for, we agreed to move to, you know, establish these boundaries for these reservations. But in doing that, they reserve those rights in that area, saying, okay, we'll do that. We'll move to, but we're going to, we're not, the hunting and fishing is not part of the deal. We're going to keep that. And it's much less like a landowner who sells their land and say, you know, I want access to this. So they put it in the deed reserving that right for them. It's no different than that. It's a property right.
Let's talk a little bit about relations between Indian and non-Indian people, for lack of a better, I suppose, race relations. Where are we with that? Are we getting better? What help non-Indian people understand what we could be doing better?
In general, I guess I think we're getting better just because the communication nowadays is a lot better than it was 20 years ago. I think people just interact more, and we're a lot more mobile. Communities, really, even Grand Portage, is not near as isolated as it was 30 years ago. But in general, I think it's getting better, and I think we do have some areas that we could work on, and one of them is a basic understanding that, you know, we are different, and we're not, you know, we're not Indian people. In general, are very positive people, and we, you know, we're not declaring war on anybody. We just really have an interest here in some things that we want to protect, just like anybody else. And I know a lot of people, and having raised, you know, four girls now, well, three and plus one still in the process, but in general, the relationships are better. You know, people, there's better understanding. I think education has a lot to do with that. We've come a long way as far as awareness and educating people what we're all about. And we went through this whole treaty process in northeastern Minnesota without the racism and all the problems that happened in Wisconsin. And I think a large part of that is people really, you know, this is Indian country, and we respect each other. And I think we're getting there. I really do.
Thank you very much for taking your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Helping to Put Indian Country in Perspective, tonight's third Thursday community conversation with Norman Deschamps, chairman of the Grand Portage Band of Chippewa. Join us on April 7th for First Thursday Community Conversation, and again on April 21st, we'll be back with another installment of Third Thursday Community Conversation.